Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. For the last month and more, we've heard, again and again, from the bot politicians and the Jews talking heads on our telescreens about the Tulsa race riot of 1921, which occurred 100 years ago this month. But they don't call it the Tulsa Race Riot anymore. It's the Tulsa Race Massacre, or the Black Wall Street Massacre. Instead of a conflict between the races in Tulsa, in which blacks fired the first shots, and in which both whites and blacks were killed, our Jewish media and political overlords and their sycophants and their employees like Joe Biden have tried to portray it as a one-sided attack on blacks by whites, supposedly prompted, and here's a really ridiculous claim, by white jealousy of black financial success. The Tulsa Tribune reported at the time, quote, "A Negro delivery boy who gave his name to the public as Diamond Dick, but who has been identified as Dick Rowland, was arrested on South Greenwood Avenue this morning by officers Carmichael and Pack, charged with attempting to assault a 17-year-old white elevator girl in the Drexel Building early yesterday. He will be tried in municipal court this afternoon on a state charge. The girl said she noticed the Negro a few minutes before the attempted assault, looking up and down the hallway on the third floor of the Drexel Building, as if to see if there was anyone in sight, but thought nothing of it at the time. A few minutes later, he entered the elevator, she claimed, and attacked her, scratching her hands and face and tearing her clothes. Her screams brought a clerk from Renberg's store to her assistance, and the Negro fled. He was captured and identified this morning both by the girl and the clerk, police say. Tenants of the Drexel Building said the girl is an orphan who works as an elevator operator to pay her way through business college." Close quote. Whites gathered around the courthouse in response to the sensational story. They were not armed. When armed blacks arrived at the courthouse, fired up by equality rhetoric and fueled by a rumor that Rowland was about to be lynched, he was not. They confronted the unarmed whites who had gathered there, firing shots into the crowd. 13 whites would ultimately die, along with 26 blacks in the riots that followed. A total of 39 confirmed deaths. Even the wildest claims of those who call this a massacre of blacks by whites don't exceed a claim of 350 black deaths. Remember those numbers. 26 confirmed dead, 350 dead, according to the most hysterical and unverifiable claims. 26 and 350. Those evil racist white people who ran Tulsa impaneled a grand jury to investigate the cause of the riot. That jury stated in its report to the court, quote, "To the Honorable Judge Val Jean Bittison of the District Court, Tulsa, Tulsa County, Oklahoma. We, the grand jurors summoned by you to make investigation of the cause or causes of the recent riot and other violations of the law in Tulsa and Tulsa County, beg leave to submit to you the following report, in addition to the indictments and accusations which are already in your hands. We find that the recent race riot was a direct result of an effort on the part of a certain group of colored men who appeared at the courthouse on the night of May 31, 1921, for the purpose of protecting one Dick Rowland, then and now in the custody of the sheriff of Tulsa County, for an alleged assault on a young white woman. We have not been able to find any evidence, either from white or colored citizens, that any organized attempt was made or planned to take from the sheriff's custody any prisoner, the crowd assembled about the courthouse being merely spectators and curiosity seekers resulting from rumors circulated about the city. There was no mob spirit among the whites, no talk of lynching, and no arms. The assemblage was a quiet assemblage until the arrival of the armed Negroes, which precipitated and was the direct cause of the entire affair. While we find the presence of the armed Negroes was the direct cause of the riot, we further find that there existed indirect causes, more vital to the public interest than the direct cause. Among these were agitation among the Negroes of social equality. We find that certain propaganda and more or less agitation has been going on among the colored population for a considerable time. This agitation resulted in the accumulation of firearms among the people and the purchase and storage of quantities of ammunition, all of which was accumulative in the minds of the Negroes. We are glad to exonerate the great majority of the colored people who neither had knowledge of or part in either the agitation or the accumulation and storage of arms and ammunition. We therefore recommend that Colored Town be policed by white officers, that indiscriminate mingling of white and colored races in dance halls, picture shows, and other places of amusement be positively prohibited, and every law be rigidly enforced, to the end that a proper relationship may always be maintained between the two races. Close quote. What happened in Tulsa was a race riot. Whites, their manhood not nearly as dimmed and weakened as it is today, were deeply concerned that a white girl had been attacked by a black male, and gathered at the courthouse to see what justice was being done. Blacks, fearful that one of their own might be lynched, and inflamed by the equality propaganda of their day, promoted even then by Jews and communists, showed up with guns, and true to their heritage of low impulse control, fired into the crowd of whites. A battle ensued, and the blacks lost. If any lesson can be learned from the Tulsa race riots, it's the same lesson to be learned from all race riots. The races don't trust each other. There is racial conflict whenever differing races, and boy do they differ, are required to live in the same society, under the same laws. One race always predominates, and the other or others always resent it. So the lesson to be learned is racial separation, on a continental scale preferably, is a good and necessary thing. Let's compare what happened in Tulsa 100 years ago to what happened just 1,800 miles southeast in Haiti a little more than a century earlier. Here's an excerpt from William Pierce's Bringing Democracy to Haiti. Quote, "In 1789, on the eve of the French Revolution, the population of Saint-Domingue, the French colony, now called Haiti, was about 35,000 whites and nearly 500,000 black slaves. The whites were outnumbered 15-1. They refused to put their political and class differences aside until it was too late. And France, first torn by a self-destructive revolution and then preoccupied by a series of European wars, was unable to provide assistance when it was needed. The first black insurrection in Saint-Domingue occurred in August 1791. Inspired by a group called the Amis des Noirs and by their own voodoo leaders, the latter of whom persuaded them that they were immune to the whites' weapons, the slaves in the northern part of the colony began attacking their masters as they slept on the night of August 22. White men were hacked to death immediately, if they were fortunate. Otherwise, they were butchered by the voodoo-inflamed blacks in ways too horrible to describe here. The fate of the white women was even worse. The blacks who marched on Le Cap Français carried as their standard a white baby impaled on a spear. More than 2,000 whites were murdered during the first 2 months of the 1791 insurrection. The leftist egalitarian madness of revolutionary France led to the freeing of the blacks and their being simply turned loose and taking over Haiti by sheer force of numbers and the disunity and lack of support for the remaining whites. 13 years later, Haitian black emperor Dessalines took a conciliatory stance. He invited the French settlers who had left after 1791 to return, promising them their safety and the return of their property. Many foolish whites, perhaps befuddled by Republican doctrines of interracial brotherhood and equality, accepted his offer. When, a few months later, Dessalines had cowed his rivals, and it became apparent that Napoleon was again too preoccupied by conflict in Europe to concern himself with matters in the faraway Caribbean, he decided that conciliation was no longer necessary. His promise of security and property rights for the whites was forgotten. Ordinary blacks soon realized that they would not be punished for transgressions against whites. If they saw a white woman they wanted, they seized her. If they saw a white man with a piece of property they wanted, they took it. White resistance to these depredations infuriated the blacks. By the first days of 1805, black gangs were murdering whites on the streets of Port-au-Prince, and the practice quickly spread to other cities. Unlike 1791, in 1805, there was no real urgency about the slaughter. The whites were completely at the mercy of the blacks. There were no military considerations. Killing whites was simply a sport. A mob could entertain itself for hours putting a white man to death in the most horrible ways savage minds could invent. White women could provide amusement for days before they perished. In April, Dessalines gave official sanction to the butchery. By the beginning of May, every white man, woman, and child in the former colony of Saint-Domingue had been murdered. Close quote. Have there been any tear-jerking news stories about this very real massacre? some 35,000 dead, a large portion of that number living out their last weeks being raped and tortured? Has there been a May 1st commission to memorialize the innocent dead, demanding national and international action to prevent a recurrence of this massacre of whites? Was there a 1991 remembrance, a 2005 remembrance, a 2015 remembrance? Will there be a 2025 remembrance? Will the descendants of white people who somehow escaped the massacre, or their kin who lost family members and all their wealth in the massacre, be allowed to tell their stories on national television or in the New York Times? Will they ever be compensated? Yet, we have resident Biden and all the truckling, crooked politicians in both Oklahoma and Washington, and all the paid whores of the controlled media wailing about Tulsa, where a couple of dozen blacks died after a group of blacks shot first and killed whites. They wail about Tulsa's whites being so racist, but almost never mention that those same racist whites that ran the city actually dropped the charges against the black boy who grabbed Sarah Page. They wail about Tulsa's whites being racist killers, yet never mention that some $2,500,000 in 2021 money was given for relief of the blacks who suffered in the riots. There is an agenda at work here, and we think it is wise to consider that the faux egalitarian agenda, which the super-rich media Jews use to inflame the lower races against innocent white people and blame white people right down to and including white children in working-class households, what few there are left, and white grandmothers on pensions for everything wrong in this world, this faux egalitarian hate whites agenda is even more intense in 2021 America than the egalitarian agenda was in 1791 Haiti. Far more intense, far more pervasive, far more entrenched, far more able to stifle and destroy its critics, far more able to track and to punish, and led by those with an extraordinarily bloody track record from 1917 Russia to 1945 Germany. And it is therefore reasonable to conclude that its denouement may be far more violent and just as devastating as the Haiti massacre was, if we do nothing. The National Alliance is building a living community to prepare for the whirlwind that our enemies and their collaborators and captives have sown.